something that you told me stayed in my head. All night long, you wanted me to love you when you said, simply reach out and touch me, my love.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Hey, a lovely day here in Hawaii, and wish you were here. But then you're not freezing back there on the mainland. And I'd like to say hello to my two little friends back there listening to me, to Malik and Zion Nelms. And stay warm, stay safe, and get educated, man. And anyway, this is a real nice day today. I'm feeling good about a little bit of everything. So I'm going to talk a bit about H-Power again. I know it's a sore subject, but there are some good things coming out of this. And if we seize this opportunity and don't squander it, it's a cure for a lot of our nonsense that we see. We have an actual template, to say that we always point fingers, and as some have described it, to the point where many of you listeners out there will have a tendency of be motivated to call up and defend our illustrious mayor and his administration or what have you. But I have to tell you, if he's not a crook, then I would submit this. Then he's the poorest manager that I've witnessed in government. So you have a choice. I said bad things in either way you look at it. And I think they are substantiated. He has a staff that is inexperienced in the supposed expertise of doing the people's work. That's not happening. As we say in Mississippi, it ain't happening, baby. So they seem to be always primed to fire back and strike out. You will never get them to admit that they're just wrong, that they're just the image, that even the mere appearances, everything is just dirty, calls into questions of the behavior, whether it's the rail or whether it's the homeless, whether it's, things like the bike trail, the bike path, and the bike lane. Oh, that's a pretty thing. That's nice. That's green. But when it comes down to the elements of real concern, how they impact all of us, taxes, excessive taxes, excessive fees, or just owning up. Now, I have to be careful and not place my values on the mayor and project and say that because I believe this is what he should do. But to get a clear understanding, now the mayor has, some of the things that he shows up and talk about on TV, it's like, okay, that's nice. But what about the theft of money at, what about the mismanagement at H-Power, Mr. Mayor? What about that? Have any comment? No comment. He's out of town on vacation or family leave. We're here stuck with the rest of the family. So there's some serious issues developing here. And you're probably thinking, well, this is about the 18th time that this guy has talked about H-Power. When is he going to just give up? Has he gone nuts? Is there some problems there? Is he stuck on stupid? And, yeah, I am, pretty much, because I see a lot of stupid things happening here. And so I'm stuck on stupid. I'm trying to understand them, ladies and gentlemen. And it's horrendous. So today, I'm going to try and find that. Let me just see here. In regards to the H-Power matter, and that I shared with you that we were able to provide the advertiser. We got a copy, an advanced copy of the audit of the H-Power conducted by the city auditors. And I released that to the advertiser in hopes that they have a bigger audience and they're good at distributing things like this. And you have a bigger audience and it's a Sunday. So they actually printed it and wrote an article. And you didn't see the mayor involved at all. He has no comment. But just to pull your coattail and say that a project, you would think now he'd have some kind of comment or had someone to speak in his administration to these ills. And they are, you know, but he didn't do that. Wasn't to be found. So the advertiser, thankful, they did a good article. And then later they did an editorial. And we still haven't heard from the mayor. But interesting, the mayor did show up and tell us about Mr. Kealoha, the chief of police. And let me tell you something. If some of you can't bring on racism and get your lips to utter that word, or your tongue to it's a struggle. You saw an example of what is basically a racist act on the part of the mayor. Louis Kealoha worked hard to get, no matter what you think, if you say that he's not a good chief, he's not this, he's not that, or he's questionable, then the whole system is questionable because he was properly appointed, selected, and all. And so the mayor approaches the public in chastising the chief of police to submit and say to the mayor, to the chief of police, you should tell us everything about that case. You should be more transparent. And in fact, what do you mean by transparent, Mr. Mayor? You are an attorney. You know that it does not serve anyone well to be compelled or forced or just to do it on their own, to volunteer, to give statements while they're under investigation. You know that. But you see, the mayor has known that the audit was coming out. The mayor knows that he was, in fact, the mayor, Kurt Caldwell, knows factually that there was an audit. It did not reflect well. It spoke some bad behavior. He had no comment, but he had lots to say about Louis Kealoha. I'm sorry, folks. I know it's probably hard, and some of you probably just turn your radio off. Well, you know, see you when we talk about the Easter Bunny or whatever. But for right now, these are real issues. And the mayor has yet to speak up, has yet. But he did, in fact, and I'm sure, because when things are they're nipping at your ankles, yeah, your people batten down the hatches, and they don't just get vocal and verbal. They stay away from the issue. But this morning, Lori Kahakina, the director, City Department of Environmental Services, where all this hoo-hoo is occurring, or craziness, or questionable acts, or what appear to be unethical acts and inconsistent with the city procurement practice and the state procurement laws at H-Power, she did write an editorial, or letter to the editor, I should say. And it's in today's Star Advertiser. And her statement is, editorial on H-Power misdirected blame. The Star Advertiser's editorial, quote, H-Power needs stricter oversight. Our view, December 16th. Incorrectly blame the Caldwell administration for the mishandling of contracts for the waste of energy to energy installation. The audit states that the two contracts in question were issued in May and July of 1985. The audit makes clear that the review was conducted for a period prior to the 2013. City Auditor Edwin Young confirmed this fact to Star Advertiser reporter Gordon Payne, stating that the audit report covered the period before Mayor Caldwell and his environmental department director took over. This letter attempts to correct the record, and I would hope that the editorial page would also correct this serious misimpression. Lori Kahakina, a director, City Department of Environmental Services. Well, Lori, I agree with you. That letter was a feeble, poor one, sad, you know, just absolutely unbelievably ridiculous, where you state, this letter attempts to correct the record. Well, if you're correcting something, do you add to and convolute matters when you say you attempt to? You know, you either just spill out the facts, and in the process you would acknowledge that, yes, the contract initially was 1985, but there's a guy named Kurt Caldwell, who was the acting mayor, and then he became the mayor. And while we all may agree that he didn't have anything to do with what took place before, but there is behaviors that are occurring that are consistent with what transpired. And it's just so happened that same situation where the mayor, who you seek to defend or attempt to set the record straight, spit it out. Tell us. Tell us that, yeah, we started off with $333 million for the cost of that facility, or a little more, maybe off of a couple million, and it blossomed to $1 billion, let's say. And you're fussing over something that really is not... you treated this just the same way you treated the sewage spill. You only tell us what you want us to know, but when we ask questions and make a statement, then you run back and say, and you try to put us in our place. But how easy is it to forget that you work for the people, and putting the people in place is probably misplaced effort on your part, energy, misspent energy, because our place is looking for efficiency in government. Our place is when we see this kind of behavior coming to light, then we don't want to be told it's not our responsibility. We didn't create that, but you are now creating it. So if you see a gaping wound, then you should be telling us that we're in triage and we're going to treat this, and we have these methods of treatment to rid this problem, society or the community or the taxpayer of this problem. No assurances. Isn't that funny? So I think that given the fancy footsteps that we see with the gentleman with the plaid palaka shirt, and always on when there's a cupcake art show, or when there's people blowing smoke rings, or there's people doing the two-step in the tulip patch, there's the mayor. But when it comes to people stepping on the taxpayer and trouncing and misspending and submitting our tax dollars to open hands with no accountability, no parameters or anything, don't bother to go and waste ink and write in the newspaper. If it's such a, I don't know how better to describe it than to say that it's BS. It's trash, and you're apparently good at that. So I think that it will all come out, and I believe, again, Mr. Mayor, you owe us, the public, you owe Peter Louis Kealoha an apology, because it's not Louis Kealoha that you insulted. You insulted the whole process. You don't respect the FBI. They need the mayor to come along and nudge the case, the mayor of Honolulu, to go and nudge the case along so it would help the FBI understand what transpired in the mailbox. Who took the mailbox? We don't need that kind of assistance from a mayor and that kind of activity, Mr. Mayor. We need someone to lead us and not to bleed us of the billions of the money. We go over to the rail. And I guess Laura Carquina would write an article there and say, well, he's only been on for a short time. But, yeah, but you can spend and be a big spender in one night. You don't have to be around for 10 years, 20 years since 1985. You can blow our money, because you don't have the ability to see through it. You don't have the intellect. Though you might be an engineer, you can't hang with the big boys like the Covantas and the HDRs and the companies that are contracting. That's why maybe, Lori, that you continue to, even though you may have inherited this problem and the mayor may have inherited, you don't have the wherewithal or the intellect or the fortitude to say no in the interest of the people. You just don't have that. But then I guess you also couldn't find yourself writing that either, because it's not there. You don't get things out of an empty bucket. Integrity. You should be writing an article pleading with the public that we don't stone you or something, or that we let you stay around, that we don't come and seize the keys from the office and tell the mayor to get out of here and go. That's how you should. You should humble yourself, you see. But no, you have to go into your closet and get your broom and fly by real fast and pass, tossing out words and as if we're supposed to be put in our place. Our place is that we're sick and tired, and I mean really sick and tired of seeing tax monies. We get a bill in the mail, more taxes, more fees, more proposals. And then in turn, this is all we get is a smart-mouthed brat to write us a letter to tell us, well, my boss wasn't here when it all happened, when it first started, when the crooks first came. My boss is here only now. But your boss was an acting mayor. And your boss is, you know, I had reported that we had 16 people from HDR engineering to give donations. Well, that's blossomed to more than 40-something. And you're right, Lori. We are in our place now. You've told us off. But here's the only problem. We're still stuck with the bill. What you going to do? You see? So, the H power, there's many of things that I think that we need to, as taxpayers, as environmentalists, those that are still assessing this to see if it's anything in there that's sexy to make your organization rise to the top and look good. This is a sexy issue, ladies and gentlemen. You grab hold of this and all of the environmental groups and the tax people and all, and the politically minded who want to say that we need clear examples to show how inept and how, I would say, just flat out corrupt this administration is. Here's your opportunity. It's all there. I'm willing. I've posted everything that I have except for a few emails, and I'm going to do that. And I'm also offering any organization out there. I have hundreds of documents. I have gone, and in interest of clean air, I've sat there for 2 days, and I think I've scanned maybe 3,000 or 4,000 documents. I'll provide those to you free of charge. I went to clean water, same thing, access to their records. I've gone to safe drinking water for all the underground injection wells and all of the other things. Have that for you. And I have gone to the solid waste branch. Have all of that documentation for you. You won't have to do anything but send me an email to carol@carolcox.com. And I will mail you an email, a CD, with all of the documents. And then you can see for yourself why Laura Kaikina and Kurt Caldwell, this should be their final swan dance, because can we tolerate this kind of behavior? Should we? So in this process, I thought, let's talk a little bit more in depth about what is going on. So Laura Kaikina says that, well, this all took place in 1985. And the auditors said that It was for a period prior to the year 2013. Okay. But there is a recent development, and it was all about what transpired before they came in. I'm just quoting her. The auditor found that activities were that there were in place no real oversight from the city as to an adherence to the procurement laws of the state and city, and that there were concerns that bids were not solicited, and you know, all of that. And so we talked about that H-Power new development with the photovoltaic building. Now, I have their emails where they're talking about the actual, let me get to it here, the email they talk about. They say, well, basically, let's get our story straight, or this is the story we're going to tell, you see, to justify putting white goods in. Now, how did Covanta get involved in this process? Well, they have the contract now, and supposedly it went out to bid to build the building, which is required to be a minimum of $16.1 million, as according to the dictate of the consent decree that's between the Department of Justice and the EPA and the city. But there are other activities there, so who's going to run that facility? Is it Covanta? Well, if that's the case, where's the bid? Is this a new contract? Or are they going to amend the old contract, Lori, back to 1985? Or are they going to they're going to do white goods, washers, dryers, and stoves, and refrigerators, and freezers, and air conditioners at that same facility? That's also a separate contract and an activity that is completely irrelevant to the function of. And yet, Covanta is right there. They have submitted an application to the state to modify their solid waste management permit. Not in 1985, Lori, just recently. And so it's just absolutely, it's one thing when you find someone violating you. It's another when they laugh at you and smile and then tell you, you shouldn't leave your car open. You should lock your car if you really don't want anybody to steal. It's the tantamount to that because, Lori, you're supposed to look out for the best interests of the people. That's why we hired you and we give you such good salary. And, Mr. Mayor, if the contractors are giving you a little good money for election or campaign purposes or whatever, think how much we give you in comparison. We give you a job. We give you insurance. And we voted you in. Well, that's not to say you didn't trick or shit into it and tell us how bad Ben Cayetano was. You see, this is... But then I guess I shouldn't be shocked to see how you did Louis Kealoha, the chief of police, on a bright early, you know, get down there to the TV stations. Let me just go out here and foul this man's name. Let's just, oh, to hell with everything. Let's just foul the whole position. Let's just say that this man is not the chief of police. It's not the statute. It's nothing. He's a nobody. And then the media plays right into that. While the camera should have been high definition, focus on you and your crooked ways and the behavior that you've operate, and you have shown us question after question after question. You can't manage Hart, so you run out there and then you become our friend on Hart. I want the Hart to tell us what we're doing. Brother, you can't have it both ways. You're either going to be corrupt or an honest leader. Can't be both. can't run around, and when the door is kicked down, there you are with heart and the questionable activities and getting lots and lots of donations from the engineering firm that has the freedom to write their own contracts and do all kinds of things when there's no oversight on your administration's part. You can just give them free rein. So, give an example. This is an email that I recovered through FOIA, or we'll call it FOIA, UIPA, and basically the same. Uniform Information Practices Act is the state, and Freedom of Information Act is the federal. So this is basically filed under state law. But hi all, this is from Christopher Baker and written on May 21st, 2015. See, this activity is still going, but I offered this email so that I could say to Lori, you know, look, yeah, you're right. It all took place back there. The auditor found that it was in 1985. You're right. You know, and you stand to be commended. We'll give you an award. But before you go and get that award, let's remind you of some of the things that's occurring on your watch that's quite consistent and similar to what the auditor found. So this is Mr. Baker is writing, hi all, below is a list of permit notifications and other items we will be having to work on together to support the project. Please review and comment. Stormwater. Right now, this is about that building, that photovoltaic building. It hadn't gone out to bid who's going to operate it. Now, they talked about some bids went out and R.M. Towel and some other company sent. I don't know if they sent. The emails don't make specific to if they sent a packet or they stated. Who knows? But anyway, talked about stormwater. And then a new general permit and industrial discharge will be prepared for the city to submit at least 30 days prior to the start up of to include all properties, H Power, solar building, and this one can wait until August, September or to submit, right? Solid waste permit, minor modification in progress. Please see questions below that will need answered in order to complete. Anticipated volume of material in TPD, around 15 TPD in the past year. The city manages a total of approximately 55,000 units per year, 29,000 refrigerated, 26,000 non-refrigerated. List of equipment, materials, and personnel they need. White goods for this one, white goods receiving building. This should be your equipment and personnel that will operate the, quote, white goods facility. Solar panels output tied to H-Power. What is the exact size? There will be two locations for the solar panels. On existing H-Power facility, 1.47 megawatts, and at the solar building is 1.71 megawatts. So, a detail of the phase approach with anticipated schedule. Phase one is building the solar roof and white goods receiving facility. Design the solar building to be completed by 7/7/2015. Well, I don't see a building out there that fit that. They hadn't built it, so and have it completed. Construction of the solar building will be completed 12/31/2015. So maybe if Lori has any more ink in her pen, she can write us back and call the newspaper and tell us, you know, because we have blinders on. We really wouldn't know, so let you tell us. And then the detail of the phased approach with anticipated schedule. Phase one is the building of solar roof and white goods. And then here's a killer. Now, if you have some insight on this, please, I'm just a person that's suspicious of people that don't do things right and have our trust. So here's item five. What is the quote, story, Covanta employee writes? What is the story and the need providing another option for the growing Oahu? You know, you follow? So he then says, he asks, what is the story and what is the need? So he's telling them the answer to that. This is their story that they're going to tell and why they're justifying it. Providing another option for the growing Oahu population to properly recycle their home appliances, contribute to landfill diversion, etc. Are the vendors on the island maxed out? Again, leads into our story about a growing need for additional white goods. Our story. You know, we got to, if we're going to dupe the public, we got to have a story. These are in emails. That's a benefit of filing these public records requests. Sometimes they don't bother to try and hide it, or they just think that they're so cavalier and immune to anything. So they just give them to you, and thankful they gave this to me. So white goods recycling maxed out according to their permit limitation. We don't know, but we don't think so. It all depends on how they manage the facilities throughout. There are two permitted white goods processors on island. The city's current white goods recycling contractor is permitted to store 1,000 white goods on property at any one time. The other white goods recycler on island is permitted to store unprepared white goods on a 2,000 square foot area on their property and prepared white goods on a 1,000 square foot area at any given time. Permit conditions vary from company to company, but in general, we don't think the vendors on island are maxed out. So, ladies and gentlemen, if they're not maxed out, why are we telling a story, quote, story, to justify getting these white goods and building this white good buildings when all we got to do is go and allow the existing vendors who are on the contract, they can go in and extend or expand or seek to increase the number of units that they can house on property, on site. It's that simple. And anybody argue that that's not it, because if you listen to some of the documents we have that Covanta has submitted, they get what they want, you see. For example, Covanta says that in one instance they wanted to have 780,000 tires burned at the facility. 780,000 tires. You don't want to burn a single tire. But guess what, folks? While Lori was busy finding an ink pen to tell us off and put us in our place and tell the newspaper, it takes some guts to do that now, mind you. But then when you walk around and you work for a Teflon administration, I guess, you know, nothing is a threat, especially honesty and integrity. I mean, I guess there's no way it's going to penetrate that Teflon, the administration's coding. But here are some of the things that when the politicians told us, you know, the landfill, the Waimanalo Gulch landfill, and if we get the burner, that third boiler, oh, that was going to be the solution of all solutions. And so it's a big lie. There's no solution. When you got trash, you try to recycle. You try to recycle rather than incinerate. And just give you an example. For 2014 to 2015, I pull up their records, and again, UIPA requests from the State Health Department. And here's an annual summary for fiscal year 2014 to 2015 submitted by Covanta and the city to the State Health Department, Solid Waste Branch. Now, you know that that old lie that they say, well, we're going to close the landfill. Give us an extension and then we'll close it. And there won't be any need for landfills. So that's so far from the truth that it's almost would take you in light years to get from here to the truth. And here you are. This is what goes to the landfill from the H power alone. Now, this solution to divert trash from H from the landfill so that we can eventually close it and not have a need for landfill. Just for the ash to the monofill there at the landfill for the fiscal year 2014-2015, 68,362 tons. Now, the reason I mentioned this is, you see, when Kai Kina talks about all of this occurred back in 1985, I'm going to try and contact Prince and see if he can do us a song called 1985, because that seemed to be the year that everybody said, oh, the taxpayers are asleep and they're busy doing something else. They don't know. That's according to Laurie. And she's here managing our affairs now and watching out for us. So they wouldn't know. But just in this alone, just the ash from the burning of trash at H Power, 68,362 tons. That's what they report. Then there is another unacceptable waste processed in the major burn area for 2,976 tons. Then an unacceptable waste removed from that process at H Power is another 971 tons. And guess where that goes? To the landfill. So the situation is not as they told us, that this new administration and all, and it was Hanneman, and then the mayor came along, the current mayor came along, and he started to talk the same line. So just for tires alone, in the 2014 time period to 2015 fiscal year, for 2014, from July to December, they burned 15,162 tires at H Power. Now, the solid waste rules are, you don't put in the landfill tires and you don't burn them. But they got a variance from the state health department, and that's a whole different subject, because they tend to just hand out anything like it's ice cream. And so in 2015, they had 16,539 from January to June. So something's wrong here, and we're burning tires. But at one time, they actually they put in a request to burn 780,000 tires annually. Imagine what that would do to the environment. So, if you have any comments or questions or want to join in, 524-1080, and we'll be talking much, much more about this. And though it may sound disjointed, and don't mean to present it that way, but how do you take something so blatant? And the H power is bleeding us. And I've said this a long time ago. If we were to get the right manager or elect the right person who's genuinely concerned with the interests of the people and restraining their desire to increase taxes and fighting for the taxpayer, I believe, and this is just a guess now, but based on all of the fraud and the buddy-buddy, kissy-kissy, behind-the-scene hands out and contracts or no contracts, I believe that at a minimum, overnight, if we had an honest person to come in there and say, you voted for me, I'm going to adhere to the people's interest and I'm going to work in that vein. We could see our taxes decrease by a third. You don't believe me? Let's try it. Let's try in taking and voting for an honest person. Let's vote somebody in that will adhere to our desires as taxpayers, protecting our interests. And I say a third. I believe more because so much is squandered. You cannot safely and serve the people from a tax standpoint, interest, if you allow contractors to write their own contracts. You allow contractors to do work without bids, to seek and try and bring in the better prices, even quality of work. But all of this is, this practice is subcontracting. And so the mayor, getting back to the mayor and this situation with Ke Aloha, it could be anybody. But I can't bring myself to thinking anything good about this gentleman named Kirk Caldwell. We've seen his behavior. He's rabid in chasing the homeless. Rabid. But those with money and businesses, he tend to gravitate to them in such a fashion that, you know, I don't even think that he ever challenged them. I don't think his administration challenges any contractor because they stand to hope to get a handout and they stand to get an increase in fees and rates because if they create a project, and most of these projects seem to be, what I'm reading, seem to be sold and promoted by the contractors. And a real justification for it, it just didn't rise to the occasion. Whether it's the Sand Island Wastewater Treatment Plant, where Mr. Carlisle were proposing to build a $26 million digester or dehydrator of fecal matter. We already have one that's not functioning that was $35 million. And that one was a replacement for a apparatus that was built for several millions. And they tore that down. Then put in the new Synagrove facility. And then wanted to put a second one in. And so this whole practice, something's wrong. So there's $35 million at Synagrove for the first digester or dehydrator that promised to, we would get returns and monies by selling the pellets after we process it and do the fecal matter, you know, and they'd sell that and Hawaii would be just glowing and basking in money. You understand. It may smell like this, but the smell of money is better. Well, it didn't get off, folks. Never worked. They put some on the golf course. But what they're having to do now is burn it at H-Power. Oh, H-Power. So you have that one. So the city council killed the new proposed digester or dehydrator, whatever you call it, for Synagrove. That would have been $26 million. But again, the way things go in this town, change orders, amended contracts, it would never have, we would have seen more money. And now we're having to transport the fecal matter to H-Power. So 2011 to 2012, talking about managing and efficiency, and we're going to talk about the EPA's role and where I think that what should take place on the subject of solar voltaic, and we'll get into that and talk about I believe that the EPA has erred, and their allowance for and requiring them agreeing to build a solar voltaic building is not right. I believe that the EPA should have done more thinking and said that, well, why don't we require you, the city, to, instead of building a solar voltaic facility to power H-Power, where money seemed to be just given away, why don't we require you to take this dollar amount, $16 million, and place solar voltaic panels on city buildings to offset the cost for the taxpayer, and that would be green. It would be a solution. Or fine them $16 million and then have the state to ask for a grant in the Department of Education and take that $16 million and put panels on places like Nanakuli and other places on the Big Island where they didn't have screens on the windows and things of that nature, and put a solar panels on there and make them green. Now imagine the use of that. Those schools are used quite a few days out of the year. Imagine how green that would be. But no, the EPA extended a courtesy for whatever reason to offset the losses or impact in the greenhouse gases up at Kapaa Quarry that the city failed to manage. You see, something's wrong here. And you've heard the term stuck on stupid. Well, I'm not stupid. I'm just stuck on trying to find out why we have such stupid things. When we turn on the TV tomorrow, there's going to be another need either in our schools or in certain facilities. Or why not the city be required to do solar panels at all of its parks and the restrooms? You see, or do solar panels on all of its lifeguard stands. But instead, they leave it to the contractors and the city, who is woefully inadequate in their administration and the adherence to the rules. So there's a problem. We'll be back in the next couple of minutes. This is the Carol Cox Show. You can pick us up at carolcox.com and podcasts or live stream. So go there and tell your friends. And the next hour, please feel free, because it's the end of the year. If you have any subject matter out there you'd like to share with others, what's making you angry, let us know. Give us a call, 524-1080. We'll be right back.
Each never thought that love could touch me, move me this way. Don't you ever leave me, baby.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K101. Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Okay, hey, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Another lovely day here, and I'm all excited and just with the new things that's around the corner that's coming. And all the good thoughts from the past. Isn't life beautiful? Well, anyway, I thought I would tell you guys a little story today. And being that it's Christmas, get your hot tea and your coffee and your eggnog. And we're going to take a little trip to make-believe. And the story is about racism that doesn't exist. And it's only going to take a couple minutes, so make sure you got enough coffee to get you through this. And this is Mere Little Story, and it takes place in paradise. And the characters are, you have a mayor who's Anglo-Saxon, and then you have a former governor who's Filipino, And then you have a Hawaiian man who's a chief of police who's native Hawaiian. And the story goes like this. The Anglo-Saxon mayor attacks the, and assails the intellect and the rise of and the success of the Filipino governor. And then he had to apologize for the false statements and the assault on the character. And this mayor does the same thing again with the chief of police. And all the citizens in this town, in Paradise, said, oh my goodness, didn't know that, didn't know we had racism. Now that's just a story. Now I'm not saying that that is real life, but seems to be, there's a similar thing. I don't know if it's a story or what. But what if that scenario played itself out in Paradise? Would you, who live in Paradise, acknowledge that and call it what it is? Or will we go back to Never Never Land and say to ourselves, it's just a story? But I believe, because life, my life, and the many parallels, and in Paradise, what happened was even the media joined in and broadcast that crap. Oh, I'm sorry. This is a story. I'm sorry. But anyway, just ask yourself, would you like to live in a world such as that? Would you call into question, how is it that anybody in that story can behave in such a fashion and act without any concerns or consequences or being held accountable for such behavior? Just asking, just tell you the story. So enjoy your holidays and all of that, and but let's start the New Year's off speaking the truth, not stories. So there's a caller here. Let's see. Caller, go ahead with your comments, question.
Well, I just heard you. I didn't listen to all of it, but were you heard? To the current governor or just Filipino governor in general?
Well, it's a story.
Oh, just a story. Okay.
Yeah.
But the current governor is Japanese.
Well, I understand that, but it's just a story. You got to learn to read now. That's another example. If you don't go to the right schools and you don't listen, and I would say, and I find this kind of calls and to be exactly consistent with what behavior Kahakina plays. She wants to tell you off. Just listen to the story and you can draw your own conclusions, you know. So yes, I do know that the current governor is Japanese, but he's also an American and a pretty damn good one. As far as he's paid his dues in the legislature. And you understand. But thanks. If you want clarification more, I'd be happy to talk to you about it. And Okinawan, in fact, that maybe I, a little detail that maybe you know, but that's real life. That's not the story. Anyway, I got an email or text, and we're talking about various things, and we talked about Ma'alaya Harbor, and Ma'alaya Harbor is in Maui, and let me see if I can open that up, 1 second here, and Ma'alaya, we talked about it where it's just horrendous, the conditions, and it's operated by Department of Land and Natural Resources boating off, but in the Maui Times, I guess it was an article, editorial, and it was termed "Boater Frustrated with Lack of Trailer Stalls." And the author of this letter wrote, "If you're like me, the ocean is my therapy, my disconnection from reality. Regardless if I can catch fish or not, my frustration is trying to find an open trailer stall at Ma'alaya Harbor." Maui has a few hundred trailer boats here, but Mauna continues to offer only 6 trailer stalls and 1 handicap stall. That's it. As part of the volunteer group of concerned boaters willing to help and offer our Manao, that's understanding and guidance from the boaters' point of view, we met with DOBAR officials on a monthly basis and submitted our draft to help improve conditions months in advance. Knowing to pay to park company was being negotiated with. This pay to park process went into effect the first week of August. Our trailer stall proposal we submitted was lost at sea. It's now December, and we still have only 6 boat trailer stalls. Respectfully, Ave Nalu Yin Wailuku. Once again, what happens? We're left frustrated. Government decides to, oh, we got a solution to that. We'll start charging for parking. Don't increase any stalls. Don't increase the convenience to the people. And we are a water-based community, basically. We're an island community surrounded by water. I don't need to tell you that. So you would think we would be quite eager to provide the opportunity for boaters and everyone else access to the waters and what have you. And I also just met with a gentleman who talked about hiking trails, and I'm going to try to get him on one day and talk about this. Out in Mililani, he pointed out something you really don't have. They don't encourage you to hike and do outdoor recreation. There's no access. Most of the time, you got to break the law to go in. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question. Thank you.
Hey, Carol.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. You recognize your voice?
Yes, I do.
Very good. You know, build it and they will come.
Mm-hmm.
However, maintenance and stewardship by the state and by the counties is poor. Very, very poor.
Uh-huh.
And what you're discussing in Mauna Harbor happens to all the different harbors where there is no parking stalls that allows those fishermen ample and protected place to leave their craft and not have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Waimanalo, there's a discussion going on about the beaches. And just the other day, I met with some people, and we talked about the utilization of our beaches. Now, if you remember, just a couple of weeks ago, Waimanalo beaches were under the jurisdiction of Hawaiian Homes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened at this meeting was because of the utilization of the beaches by various levels in our community, thereby blocking access to the beach for the local folk. As a result, at this meeting, I noticed a couple getting off of a car and going to the beach to be married. And, you know, it's one thing that I shared with when I was a tour conductor, that Waimanalo had a special place, very, very special. It was very wide world renowned. And that was Manana, Rabbit Island.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a result of various television programs like Hawaii 5-0, like Magnum PI, where in the backdrop, Manana or Rabbit Island was always shown. When I was a tour conductor and when we came on the east side And to Waimanalo, this is where we would have lunch at one of the beach parks. And gradually, as we're continuing around toward Makapu'u, I would talk with my tour group that came from all over the world that there would be a specific area that if you would see that, you would automatically go back to Hawaii Five-O, Magnum P.I., or even some of the earlier movies that were shown and that was taken with a backdrop of Rabbit Island.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this couple that got off the car and went down to the beach to get married because she was in her gown and he was in a suit, and I know they were going to get married, aimed straight for the area that they could see Rabbit Island. But if you take any beach in Waimanalo, you can see Rabbit Island. But just the fact that she made an attempt to want to get to the island told me that there's Rabbit Island in the back. She wants a backdrop of Rabbit Island in
mm-hmm.
so she can tell the people, been there. It was part of my wedding.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, negligence. You know? In the parks, there is no parking stalls for buses, which come into the park and occupy 3-4 parking stalls. And if there's 2 buses or 3 buses, could you imagine the blockage that the people from the residential area would not have access to the beach?
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are the things that the state and the counties are very, very guilty when it comes to stewardship and maintenance. Build it and they will come and it falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the university. It's so deep. When you walk around the campus and you see cracks in the wall and walks that are broken and terrible.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I hear you talking about right now, Carol.
Broken trust.
Absolutely.
And then what, in that same area, right by the pier, when you're looking out at Rabbit Island, looking to the left of that pier, there's a fishing shrine there. What are they doing to preserve it or protect it or anything?
Yes, yes.
What's
yes.
the name? I don't.
Yes.
The name. I've gone there many a times. And
you know the thing that you're talking about in Maui, Malaya.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing is in Kona at what's the name of the boat harbor there. The DLNR and the county
Honoko House.
And the state was supposed to put that outdrop.
Right.
And it's right in the harbor instead of out in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much maintenance. Maintenance, care, and stewardship.
Yeah.
I was devastated, Carol, when we went to Kalae. The last time I was in Kalae when I lived in Kona, I experienced the Maori people coming to Hawaii to recapture and relive a part of their history. They were hosted by Auntie Edith Kanaka Ole and Auntie Pele Honua. They came to relive the stepping off. You see, the Maori people, before they became Maori, were Hawaiian. And that's where they left. Kalae, mm-hmm. South Point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I haven't been there for years, ever since I moved back to Oahu. But that was the last time that I went there to see this, to be part of this historical event. We got to talk about that at another time. However, to be part of this historical event.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the longest time, and we talked about this while I was a commissioner, when I was a commissioner, about stewardship and about leases and about boarded homes, etc., and I can go on, and so can you. However, for the longest time, there was a gentleman from Kona that wanted to get a right to enter in the Kalae area to take care. When we went there, I found it to be an off-road four-wheel jump. Now, that was devastating because when we talked with the people in Kau, they were very, very upset with the poor stewardship whereby all of this stuff was taking place and the Ivy, the bone of our ancestors, was scattered all over the place because these people who do that have no respect for the Aina and for the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I came home, I think a week later, the same thing was shown on television. Make a guess where. I'm pretty sure you've seen it. Cutting a point. Yeah. So it all relates to care, maintenance, upkeep, and stewardship. And that's the reason why I'm in a position right now with some of the locals in Waimanalo looking at stewardship of our beaches in Waimanalo because it's related to Hawaiian homes. It said, according to that article, that the beaches in Hawaiian home in Waimanalo are related jurisdiction Hawaiian homes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that's part of a jurisdiction Hawaiian homes, and they have contracts with the state and or with the city who is not maintaining stewardship, then should the stewardship come to the people? Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Ho'ona, remember that?
What's that?
Ho'ona at Kona, on the tip there for Nelha. Ho'ona. Ho'ona. An area that is Native Hawaiians were there. Lena Souza and many other Native Hawaiians who were there got run out. And there were burial sites and what have you. And,
yes.
And now, you know, the same people that make bioacid and all that area were fighting them way back. You know, the that group of folk.
You know, I'm very concerned about how the DLNR takes on stewardship. You know what they do?
Mm-hmm. They
put up a gate.
Yeah.
And they call that stewardship. And once they put up the gate, they put up a sign. No trespassing. And they call that stewardship. No, mm-hmm. Stewardship is on the Aina.
And most people would, in fact, embrace a program. I've talked to many people who would embrace a program where their stewardship, the state provides some funding, and they would provide the labor. But it's such a relationship that the state treat the native people or the communities as if they're at odds with them, and they're only paying homage or to the guy who's going to come in and pay a little money and generate the quote economy. But if the facilities are degraded and trampled on, it's not going to be attractive.
It's
right?
Not going to happen. You know, at a meeting, at a gathering, as in our discussion, one of the persons that was in the gathering said this: let everything be based on mana, not money.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is because when the money runs out, everybody runs away.
Mm-hmm. Well, if
it's by mana, like for instance, the fish ponds and the recapturing of establishing the fish ponds, like in Heia.
Mm-hmm.
What happened and what's happening right now to the fish ponds and the reestablishment of the fish ponds, that is done by mana, mm-hmm. not money.
And you just need the approval and this help permitting and from the state.
From the powers that be, mm-hmm. that is not providing stewardship and maintenance.
Well, we go out to Haleiwa and some of the restrooms that are sitting there. They're on the beach and they attract people, but some of the restrooms are burned out and closed up, and they have.
You know, Carol, when I was a kid, back when I was, maybe 14, I lived for 2 years with my aunt, my mother's oldest sister, in Haleiwa. Her husband was the park keeper.
Mm-hmm.
And Haleiwa Park was one of the most beautiful parks on the island of Oahu at that time. And in fact, when I was even younger and I would spend time with Auntie Fanny, she lived right across the park, right by the fish pond.
Mm-hmm.
Where whatever that name of that restaurant is.
Jameson's,
mm-hmm. Right. She lived four houses away from Jameson, or five houses away from Jameson. Periodically, the train that started at ORNL in downtown Alapak would end up in the front of her home, and the people would come off the train and have a great big celebration in Haleiwa Park.
Mm-hmm.
I was part of that.
Mm-hmm. And it's gone.
Uncle David.
It's gone now.
And my cousins took care of that park. That was stewardship.
Mm-hmm.
That was stewardship. Today, it's stupidship.
Yeah. Well, they had docent programs at one time. They were talking about that, but that became political, and only certain people were being hired, and that that went to the wayside. But I think a lot of it is also I owe some of the failings to DHHL and OHA, because, you see, they should be demanding as a voice. And the common citizen who shouldn't have to take it up on themselves, there should be an aggressive effort on the part of like Masagatani. She should be, it should be the policy of this, each governor to say that at least preserve the beauty of this, because this is what we're selling. This is the package we're promoting out there on the airplanes and
all over the world.
And shiny, slick magazines, right?
Yep.
So there's a disconnect, and I think also that boating harbors and parks, they need to come and hire better people.
And you just mentioned before I got in, Michael, trails.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, access and right-of-ways.
Yeah.
And it all boils down to. And then you know what perspective I'm looking at? Cultural practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cultural practice was care. Malamakaaina. That was the cultural practice. We didn't work the land. We lived the land.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why ua mau ke'ea oka aina ikapono, the life of the land, not the working of the land, the life of the land, given the opportunity to take your life and put and grab onto the life and put the life that you have into the land, you will get in return.
Well, I think what's happening, the state needs to adopt a policy of going back to thinking about impacts, because each park can only carry that. Well, we'll call it. It's defined as carrying capacity.
Yes.
And so if you just inviting people in buses and all, you're going to have just right down to the compaction of the soil and the compaction of killing the grass and all of that, those basic things.
Like you say, impact.
So we need to spread it out by taking care of all of the parks, and probably we'd have a better system of parks.
You know, a couple of months back, during that rainy, that very terrible rain when waters was turning brown,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure this woman that was on television news one night, I'm sure this woman has come to Hawaii many, many times. Because in that news article, looking out at Waikiki Beach, this is what she said. And I quote her, "What happened to paradise?"
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can remember Ala Moana, where the harbor is, the yacht harbor.
Mm-hmm.
I could remember in any kind of weather, the water was clear. That's when we used to swim. That's what he used to swim. My grandfather, who lived out at Tradewind Apartments for a period of time, I stayed with him, and we would go to Ala Moana, but then it wasn't the Yacht Harbor that it is today, and neither was Palola Stream and Manoa Stream what it is today that brought that brown water down, and trash all over the place.
Do you remember the water village over there at Lagoon Drive in that area where you, I was talking to a gentleman yesterday, and he was telling me about that whole area where you would walk on a sand spit across from the direction and out in Hickam, where Hickam Air Force Base is now.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I remember. There's so much things that I remember, you know, and I thank my grandparents for giving me that opportunity, being adopted by them. I remember going places that no longer exist because of care, maintenance, stewardship, sail, now Kapu.
Yeah, I when I heard the story yesterday, I'm familiar with some of the even building of the reef runway in that area. The the airport used to be coming out near Lagoon Drive on a different. And looking at pictures and all the wetlands that were lost.
When you know my two boys were what, six and maybe 5 and 7, and we used to go out Lagoon Drive just to watch the planes come in at night. It was a adventure. Adventure, you know. Oh my God.
Well, it's being squandered, and the more they bring, and all that isn't brought in. I'm looking at Coalina, where originally the original agreement was, and the gentleman didn't succeed and then sold it. Now we're having two more hotels, and it was an issue of water way back.
Oh, yeah.
And now where are they going to get the water from? And,
Water was the issue in Nanakuli when they first opened the homestead back in 1920 or 23, 22, somewhere around there. But water was an issue then, and you know where all the water went to, right? Sugar plantation in Waianae. Yeah, and there was only periodical, and if you missed the water drop, sorry. And there was no bottled water then. You know,
just a dipper in a bucket, a porcelain bucket.
Tell me. Hey, listen, nice talking with you.
All righty. Well, thank you for calling.
And I'll give you an update of what I'm doing later on.
All righty. Okay, thank you, Uncle Joe.
Aloha.
Okay, all right, aloha. Yeah, how many sats for those on the mainland listening, and many of you new arrivals and all, how do you sort through and how do you place yourself in this big debate when you have it used to be this way, but it's not that way now because the encroachment, the invitation of others, and how at some point I'd like to be able to talk to someone that will just speak the truth and talk about openly how people were, not by gunpoint. Well, the military took a lot of the land just through government declarations that this is ours and you get the hell out of here, and that's compensation. But many times, families are repeatedly, I hear these stories, and they're not far-fetched. And that is, they had land, and the system came in, and they were taxed. And quite naturally, they didn't have jobs or couldn't afford to pay those taxes. Now, this is a native people who have a system of their own and have acquired these lands, and then you have a new arrival who has a system and projects on them. Where is the justice in that? I don't know if it's a sovereign issue, or is it just a flat-out legal issue where an ethical issue to continue on and delving out land through people, through real estate companies who then turn around and sell it to the Chinese or foreigners to build and what have you. Will, if that process is tolerated and continues, is there a sovereign nation to be had? If it is, where will they be? At the 7-Eleven station down there gathering once a month? Because at the current rate and what's developing now, I don't believe our leaders, and this is just my observation, I don't believe people in the system, both military, both the local government, city councils, I don't believe that any of them share or understand the plight of what, or even become concerned nowadays with the native people's plight or attempt to gain back. I just don't see it. They may wear their leis and have Aloha Fridays, but I think that's where it stopped. I'm personally not seeing any gesture or any activities that say legislation saying, you know, we need to revisit this. We need to convene an investigation, not a sovereign or anything, but who got screwed? Who got ripped off? How do we do it? And guys like myself who bought a house are going, oh, my God, I'm going to lose my house to the native people. Not really. I mean, it would be understanding. Maybe there's a reason to compensate people. And imagine you being native, having this property and in large amounts of large, and you have no job based on the economy or the new arrivals, but the new arrivals has introduced a system of taxes and what have you. So I'm learning through conversation that Hawaii, the native people didn't all lose it by gunpoint. Many of them lost it by pinpoint. The tip of a pen. As the ink flowed, they couldn't afford to pay the taxes that were assessed, and many of them lost it. That land was taken. And imagine, that's how you can get billions of dollars and call yourself the high five. But that's something that I've learned in this town. There's a portion of people that want to talk about it, and there's a portion that say, no, we're not going there. That's irrelevant. They just need to get with reality. But no guns involved in many instances. It was just a matter of your tax bill, or you fail to file some paper, or you entrusted something, or you borrowed something from someone and you didn't understand, and in the court system, they challenged you and you lost. So there were some practices here that I would say, some would say that it's shameful, but are we really willing to openly talk about them? And not from a standpoint of sovereign, just righteous and honesty and fairness to go back and visit. But I think we're so far down the road. It's like you go to the Bureau of Conveyance. You know, can you trust all of those documents? And I'm pretty Akamai understanding of land use documents and what have you and signing off. But even I get frustrated through the system down there. So you find yourself at a loss, and you know, by hook and crook, people can lose their lands or all kinds of things. And today we have that. I know that if I fail to pay my taxes, eventually they're going to come and say, well, you're not paying your share. You lose. We win. And someone comes in and buys cheaper through foreclosure, or the realtor buys it, or something. You know, maybe it's a system that we need to think about. If you got any comments or questions, 524-1080. And we'll be back next year. Or, well, Christmas is coming up Friday. We'll be here one more weekend, and we're going to try and do a lot more on-scene things and take the show live to different places. So if you got any ideas and got any meetings or anything like that, we're capable of going to on site and do some live broadcasts. So if you are interested, give me a call, 524-1080 or 782-6627. And we're going to also, more on Olelo, always go on, if you're interested, you can catch some of the shows that I've done on Olelo at Channel 54 at 1 o'clock on Sundays, and on the first Thursday at 7 o'clock on Channel 54, and then it plays freely from there. So that's what's going on with that. But anyway, going back to the first hour topic about the H power, if we were to get a chance, as I think I shared with some of you, that I actually filed a complaint with Steve Chang of the State Health Department asking that Covanta and that permit modification to accommodate them in allowing them to process white goods be denied. And the first of all, a couple things in this letter that I filed with them on December 2nd, 2015, we haven't heard any response yet. But you see, the law states, and the application that they submitted is not proper in my opinion, because the white goods can't be accepted at a disposal facility. Now, they can be incidental, and they're supposed to remove them from the stream when they discover them through monitoring, screening the trash. So I basically stated that in my comments, the application impermissibly seeks a permit modification that would allow Covanta to incinerate solid waste and accept recycled white goods at the same facility. You see, HAR 1158.1-65, subsection C, is clear. Quote, white goods may not be accepted at disposal facilities permitted under these rules after June 30th, 1994. That's just one justification why I'm claiming that they should not be given that permit to do white goods. A plan must be developed by the operator of solid waste disposal facility and included in the facility operations plan to implement this ban. So apparently, the city, there's no state law, Hawaii, you know, administrative rules, or they know them and just ignore them, and because they're all in it together, and the application, again, and you can't do it. The purpose of this modification, they stated, was to add to the following to the permitted H-Power operations, a new building including white goods as an acceptable material, and add process related to refrigerant reclamation. The site will be primary facility for receiving and processing white goods for the city and county, and is designed to be approximately 140,000 square feet solar building, two concrete bunkers with a combined capacity of 260 cubic yards. Why do we need to take open land and destroy it? Why can't we leave it open, you know? And you can't even accept white goods at a facility that you in where you incinerate materials. These are just a few things that I raised, and then that one, HAR 1158.1-3. By definition, the addition of an adjacent land would create a single facility comprising both disposal and white goods operations, confirming that the facility will be a single operation. The city received a conditional use permit, minor, authorizing a joint development agreement for the various parcels. Upon approval of the permit, the parcels are now treated as a single zoning lot. A facility cannot be the location for both the disposal of solid waste and acceptance of white goods. Again, I read the statute. Yet, that is exactly what the application that they seek proposes. Then the other issue that I'm raising on this and objecting that they should not be allowed this is the application should be denied because it does not provide adequate protection for the plant sanctuaries on the city-owned properties on which the work proposed in the application would be performed. The facility under the existing permit is located in tax map key 912630, blah, blah, and so other parcels, and are owned by the city. Although the application fails to disclose it, listen to this, two plant sanctuaries on parcel 33 and 34 believed to contain the last remaining natural population of Acaranthus splendens, an endangered plant species protected by the Federal Endangered Species Act in Hawaii counterpart HRS Chapter 195D. In their application, they made no mention of the presence of the endangered species. And yet, the city is part and parcel to this. So, wouldn't it be nice if the mayor told us about this? Wouldn't it be nice that if Lori Kaikina, instead of writing and putting us in our place or putting the newspaper in their place, just tell us what we need to know about the proper management and protection of our resources and our monies? So, attachment P1 of the department permit application form for solid waste management facilities expressly asks applicants to identify any, quote, sensitive environmental areas within 500 feet of the property lines. Application at page 6 in number 1, location drawings attachment. Yet, the application omits any mention of the two plant sanctuaries located in parcel 33 and 34. The application states that environmentally sensitive areas are shown on figure 6 of the application. However, figure 6 does not mention plant sanctuaries. Instead, figure 6 mentions fenced dense vegetation, while failing to disclose that this vegetation is in fact sanctuary for endangered plants. You see how they play, folks? So, Mr. Mayor, while you're telling the chief of police, boy, you better tell them your business. You better get down there and spill your guts. Not Mr. Chief of Police. I have nothing to say. It's none of my damn business. It's just between you and the investigators, which is the FBI. I'll stay out of this one because I don't want to be found to instigate or interfere with a federal investigation. See, there's that charge. But, boy, when you're arrogant and got all that power and that mana, you can just tell the local boys anything you want to do because the system protects you. You see. But yet, applications filed under your watch, under your administration, Mr. Mayor, just flat out fail to disclose the presence of endangered species. And clearly, it's not allowed. And then putting a facility and then allowing and inviting others to operate a facility that does not tolerate or allow such activity. So guess who should need to come clean and tell us the whole story? The failure to identify the plant sanctuaries is particularly concerning because the city and Covanta are clearly aware of the existence of these sanctuaries and that they contain endangered species. These are my filings. This is what I file with the city, with the state health department. And I'm also saying that the application should be denied for the reasons raised by the governmental agencies in response to the draft environmental assessment for the solar building. Board of Water Supply, as I told you, said that they were not on non-potable water. They wanted them to convert to potable non-potable water, but they refused and hadn't responded. That's one of them, their fire management plan and what have you, relating to the fire management. And has not fulfilled previous Board of Water Supply requirements. And, and I just give you little tidbits about that. So hopefully with that, and there's much more. You can go to carolcox.com and actually see the actual letter and documents that we file. We anticipate the state to just ignore this but then we have to take some legal action. But again, these are not my rules. We're just reminding them what the state law and federal law is. And so ultimately, if they were to build and violate the law, then you and I will pay more money in taxes. And that goes back to the stewardship raised by Mr. Joe, Uncle Joe Tassel. You know, the people that are managing our resources and our interests is really not doing that. They're managing for business. They're managing for campaign money. They're managing to stay in power. So something's wrong, and we must ask now, what is it so good about being in power? Is it just you want to be in power, or it pays well after dark? I don't know. But it sure leaves us in the dark, and we have a big bill. So it's a strange monkey, folks. And there's a lot more of this. And again, we're going to be talking about it until many things develop. And we might have some good news in the next couple of days. We'll hold up tongs and pens and typewriters and stay tuned. We hope that things develop so people be held accountable. I do believe that in this town there's still an element of accountability lingering around. I do believe that. I'm not so discouraged, and I hope that you share the same interest, that let's just be patient and things might work out. Be optimistic. Christmas is right around the corner. We get, if nothing else, we'll get a lot of cake and pie and be able to eat it too. So anyway, thank you for joining me, and we'll be back next week. And this is the Carol Cox Show. You can pick it up at carolcox.com if you missed anything. Feel free to send me an email to carol@carolcox.com, and I'm open to any news stories or ideas you'd like to talk about. Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.